the Fastlane on 101 ESPN with Brad Thompson and Chris Ronchi. I'm Anthony Stalter. Let's head to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. We're now joined by Jesse Rogers of ESPN.com. Jesse, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Lots to get through today.
Absolutely. Good to be with you guys, especially Anthony and Brad. What's happening?
Oh, my God. You're the worst.
Jesse, let's start off with, I mean, more insults of Chris Ronchi. That's for starters. Uh-huh. Yeah. But no, let's talk about what's your personal feelings and opinion on whether or not the union and the owners will be able to get on the same page so that there isn't a hiccup for us to watch baseball in 2020. How big of a hurdle is this?
I mean, it is a big hurdle, but I think the rhetoric gets sort of the nastiest at the beginning of negotiations, or maybe even in the middle. Like, they will, I think, get there. And the players are trying to draw a line in the sand. The owners are kind of slowly leaking things so they can sort of set the table for what's to come. And probably, you know, it'll start tomorrow in terms of negotiating this thing. I mean, first, they have to get through the safety part of this thing. That's the thing that really hasn't sort of leaked out there. And actually, I just heard from somebody, and this is not a definitive thing, that he thinks players will be tested 3 times a week, but they need to hear that first. But we have to assume that there is a safety plan that will be in place, even if they don't know it today. 6 weeks from now, they will know it. So once you get past that, obviously compensation is the other thing. And look, I'm going to preface this by saying, and I think most of us are kind of pro-player, you know, people, like, we sort of side on the players are the best in the world. A lot of us that cover the sport know the players. You know, we know what they make. We don't know what ownership makes. We can only guess what they make, and it's, you know, got 7 or 8 zeros on it, right? So it's like, you just naturally, you're going to sort of, usually, in my opinion, most fans, even me, are going to side with the players most of the time in a millionaires versus billionaires fight. So having said that, I side with them here as well. I understand ownership won't make as much money without fans in the stands. I get that. But TV money is huge. Extra postseason teams and money from the postseason will still be huge. And the arguments the players make, from the fact that they're not a salary cap league, so they don't benefit when revenues go up. They shouldn't have to give back money when revenues go down like they will this year. And the biggest thing is, and you have to put yourself in their shoes, and I know they make millions and everything, but the biggest thing is they're the ones taking the risk. Nobody else, certainly not the owners. I'm talking about the health risks. If they are going to be our country's entertainment, and they've already cut their salary in half because they're only going to play half a season, they're going to do all this, jump through all these hoops to play 80 games and give us some entertainment. I mean, I agree with their argument that they should get their full prorated 80 game salaries, whatever it is.
And Jesse, you do have players that we've heard from, not a ton, but a few at least, that have expressed their concerns in terms of health. Sean Doolittle with a really long tweet thread today, kind of laying out, and he is very well reasoned, and he laid out the entire thing of what the health concerns are. Do you have an idea of how many or what percentage of players would truly be concerned in terms of health, whether it's for themselves or family or, you know, support staff? The older people, the coaches, the umpires, that kind of thing. How many players is this going to be a sticking point for?
Well, I mean, 90% or above. Let's face it, these guys aren't, you know, monsters, right? And I only say 90%. I don't say 100% because I have talked to a few players that are just like, screw it, let's go play. Like, you know, those competitive athletes, they're just like, let's just go play. But most of them, and even those guys have pinned down, are concerned about the umpires, the coaching staffs, the older people. And of course, when they go home and all that stuff, and, you know, considering we're not going to do this full quarantine idea. Now, obviously, there will be some mechanisms in place that hopefully will keep those people safer than you know, just walking down the street. You know what I mean? Like the testing 3 times a week and all that other stuff. But it's still going to be a risk. So, yes, most of them, if not close to all of them, are first and foremost concerned about the safety risk. And that's why I don't think you can call them selfish, because it's a good point. Like, if they're concerned about safety, then maybe they shouldn't be talking about money. But here's the thing. If they don't get the answers on safety, they are more than willing to cancel the season and start over next year and forego any salary. And that's what tells me they're not all that selfish. They need safety first, and then if we're going to still go out there with some risk, we want our money. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Jesse, I realize that a lot of people don't care really about the union and the league relationship, but the CBA is coming up, as we were talking about before. It's a big deal. How much of a fear factor do you believe that there is on the player side to make any concessions right now with the CBA coming up next year?
A lot. And it's not just for that reason. There's just a lot of fear factor by the players in general. Think about the sort of uneasy feeling they had before this happened. Now what are owners going to do? Either truthfully or not, they're going to say, we got destroyed revenue-wise this year without fans, whether we paid you or not. We are tanking. How is that going to help the free agent market? How is that going to help the CBA next time around? They'll make the case that this is going to take 5 years to recover these revenues. So that's going to be baked into the process with the negotiations for the new CBA. So it's like this new world we're all experiencing. That's going to be the case. And you know it's probably not going to work out in the players' favor. And it's just too bad. It's too bad for all of us, right? I mean, there's a lot of people hurting. And that's why I get, okay, if the next CBA doesn't look as good financially for the players, okay, I can sort of understand that. But the here and now, getting them back on the field now, you got to pay them, you know, for half a season, at least, again, in my opinion.
Jesse Rogers is our guest here of ESPN.com. We're talking about the potential hurdles as Major League Baseball prepares potentially to come back in 2020. Jesse, do you feel as though that this is the biggest hurdle, or is it testing as well? Because we know that with testing, in other leagues, that you might have issues with these players, owners, whoever, that don't feel comfortable with there not being enough testing for our hospitals as well. Do you think that's an issue too for Major League Baseball's return?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think they're tied together in a lot of different ways, but yes. And that's why I say I've heard maybe players would get tested 3 times a week. What happens on those other 2 days, right? I mean, we just saw in the White House someone got tested negative, and the next day they were positive. I mean, this is not going to be a perfect system, and that's why truly there is risk. And it's mostly maybe risk for the people they're associated with. I mean, these 25-year-old guys, not likely to be severely hospitalized or severely sick, though if they're sick at all, it takes away from the team aspect. That's a whole other thing. You know, if Chris Bryant's out for 14 days Matt Carpenter's out. I mean, that's going to make a difference. But I think that they assume there's no way they're going to even start this thing up without safety being without the safety questions being completely answered as much as you can be. Like whatever the most possible way to safely do this has to be implemented, or the players will walk away. And I think we're just all assuming they are as well, that they'll have those answers. But those are the answers that haven't come out yet. And I have a feeling is because we're a month or 6 weeks out or whatever the case may be, the country and the league doesn't know exactly what it's going to look like. Are we going to have unlimited tests? That's great. Maybe they can test 5 times a week, you know, or is it going to be 3 or 2 times a week? So I think we're waiting on some of those answers for the country to move forward, but it's definitely part of the equation.
Jesse, I know that you've been paying close attention to The Last Dance, as everybody else has, especially with no sports to watch. I mean, this has really kind of been it for a lot of us. And you were very much in the middle of all of that, being at a new sports radio station when all of that began and all of that was going on. I know you've got some personal experiences with MJ, don't you?
I do, in fact. And you know, back then I was a sports radio producer, and you guys know, it's a little different aspect. When you're maybe a host or certainly a reporter, you sort of have this line and this wall, and, you know, you're trying to get a story. Well, as a producer, kind of working the edges, getting guys on, you know what producers do. And so my point is, I was able to have a little different relationship. I wasn't, like, peppering Michael Jordan with questions and stuff like that. I wrote this on ESPN last night. The one thing I don't think has been talked about, but I bet you guys would say, oh yeah, that makes sense after watching 8 episodes, is This was not a guy that had a posse or an entourage or a lot of people around him. That's why the death of his father, above and beyond the normal pain and sorrow, really affected him. He lost one of two people he really relied on. The other one was George Kohler, his driver, who made it in yesterday's episode, picked him up on day one from O'Hare Airport and was his confidant his entire career. That's what we relied on. And so you could get to Michael as a media person or as a producer, or whatever. He didn't have waves and waves of people blocking you. So I was able to see him. I saw him out at a restaurant one day, and that's how I got him on one of the radio shows. I approached him while he was having dinner with his wife, which made me nervous. I actually played a couple hands of blackjack with him on a casino boat. And that's the other thing about the gambling issue in Chicago before it went national. Really wasn't a big deal. He was on a casino boat. Table was roped off. Okay, so he wasn't playing with regular people, whatever. Everybody was watching. He saw me. We knew each other. I got under the rope. I played one hand. I think I put $10 down. I don't know. And he had like a $1,000 chip, which was kind of funny. But the point is, it was an open secret he was gambling in Chicago. Nobody cared. And then I actually was at the Plaza Hotel staying there with our sports talk show in New York the night he went to Atlantic City. And again, at that moment, it's not a big deal to me. I know I didn't know he went there. But if I was in the lobby when he got back, I don't think I would have been like calling, you know, all the news places and saying, hey, Michael, I think I would have probably said, hey, did you win? You know, it's just we're questioning whether Michael could get ready after a night of gambling. I mean, this guy could stay out all night and score 35, and he probably often did. And the last thing is, I mean, I had interactions with Rodman out and about, bars and stuff. These guys went out probably a lot more than the guys today, right? Because of no cell phones and stuff like that. But here's the key. They were so good. They were so good. They could gamble all night, party all night, and then go crush, you know, their opponent the next night. And it was a great group to be around, as much as, you know, they were being pulled in a lot of different directions and still winning.
Jesse, great stuff. You can follow Jesse Rogers on Twitter at ESPNCHI. Cubs, so ESPN Chi Cubs. Jesse Rogers writes for ESPNChicago.com and writes some national stuff as well. Jesse, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Anthony, Brad, and Chris.
Thanks. That's Jesse Rogers here on 101 ESPN. You know, he mentioned something that I thought was very interesting about the Michael Jordan aspect off the court. There is something that we can connect from what Jesse Rogers just said to one of last night's episodes in the last doc. So that's next on 101 ESPN.